Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
There's legitimate outrage over things, right? And even, and this is a, we're in a time in which there is a group of people on, frankly, both sides that wake up every day looking for who can we blame for all of our problems? You know, who are we outraged by today? There is legitimate outrage. You know, legitimate outrage. Like, look, when we tell you don't go out in the coronavirus thing, and you see people, you see these idiots who went to, on spring break and ignored orders, or Mardi Gras, and now, of course, shocker, not only is Louisiana a hot spot, but people who traveled to Mardi Gras took it home with them. Like, that's legitimate outrage. Legitimate. There are other types of outrage which are not, frankly, even close to being legitimate, right? And the NFL draft fits right into that category. Right in that category. Like there was no, there's no real outrage over, you know, some other stuff. You know, like the halftime show this year at the Super Bowl. Were there complaints? Yes, there are always going to be complaints. There was like 1,100 complaints or so. Even if there was 11,000 complaints, it doesn't matter to me. There's 150 million people watching in the States. If that's all that complains, you're fine. That's not legitimate outrage for Jennifer Lopez, who's 50 years old, shaking her thing, you know, albeit clothed on national TV. It's not legitimate outrage. It was, you know, Shakira and J-Lo shaking it, and there were people who wrote letters to the editor, and there were some complaints, but not like legitimate outrage. You know, there was the one letter to the editor in Charlotte over Cam Newton dabbing and dancing a little bit too long. That wasn't even legitimate outrage. That was somebody who wrote a letter to the editor, and the Charlotte Observer chose to put it in print. And by putting in print, it sounded like there was a lot of people who felt that way. Not just one letter. That's not legitimate outrage over Cam Newton dancing. Did he need to be dancing as much as he's dancing? Probably not. Most quarterbacks don't. And it took away from the action. We're just play football, but it doesn't really matter. That wasn't legitimate outrage. You know what else is not legitimate outrage? The NFL draft shouldn't be going on. Here's Adam Schefter, who seemed to be outraged over the NFL proceeding.
And we all hope that it happens, frankly. We all want that back. We all want to see the days where we have that distraction of football. But OTAs, that's not happening. Yeah. The offseason program, that's not happening. The draft is happening only through the sheer force and determination and lack of foresight from the NFL, frankly. I mean, they are determined to put this on while there is carnage in the streets.
Okay. Let's relax a little bit, Shefty. There is not carnage in the streets. Matter of fact, there's nobody in the streets. That's part of the beauty to this thing. Okay. It's a TV show. It's a TV show about kids with nothing becoming potentially millionaires. It's reality TV, and even that's not really that real. It's a bunch of guys in college who are getting ready to get their first professional job and be massively overpaid for that job, albeit it's a very short-lived job. Right? Most of which will not move to their city, doesn't affect anything. And there's nothing else on. Nothing else on. Why can't the NFL put on, if you can put on a daily TV show, which, by the way, Shefty was doing when he had these comments, why can't you do another TV show, especially when you have a month heads up like the NFL draft? Now, if you want to tell me that it's going to hurt the preparedness of some of these GMs and the ability to make the right smart selection, fine. that's not to be outraged over. That's an understanding for it. But he sounded legitimately outraged, like there's just millions of people dying in the streets. And hey, dude, look, this thing is bad. We're all on lockdown. We're all in front of our TVs. So it's either Tiger King, Succession, go back and watch The Wire, Better Call Saul, or watch the NFL draft. You can watch Netflix, but you can't watch the NFL draft? Like, what? I don't, help me. Somebody needs 877-99 on Fox. I don't normally take phone calls, but if you can present an argument for why this is somehow a bad thing, it's somehow amoral. I just, look, the NBA would play if they could. They just can't. If the NBA had a way in which they could do something virtually, which is basically what they're doing with this, they're doing a 2K tournament, they would do it. Do you know why? Because there's nothing else going on. there's an expression, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but it goes a little something like this. Like, say we're in a recession, right? Or an economic, whatever, for whatever period of time we're in a recession. I don't know if it's a lasting recession, but it's a recession. A recession is a rich person's garage sale. It's really what it is. You know, the difference is this one is really going to hurt rich people because rich people own stuff and their businesses are getting slaughtered. If you own hotels, if you own restaurants, if you own, if you're a commercial real estate guy, you're real wealth. And then, you know, if you own a apartment complex, you might not be collecting rent for 3-4 months and there's nothing really you can do about it. But in this time where nobody's making money, nobody's doing anything, wait, we're not going to let these guys have their name called? Like, this is just picking teams on a playground, only it's popularized by television. There's legitimately no legitimate reason that you even have to be present. Joe Thomas, who just retired last year, famously during the draft, went fishing instead. What's the difference? What is the difference? Shefty acting and Adam Schefter is not the only one, but acting as if he's outraged. This is the worst kind of phony outrage. You can watch any other TV show, but you can't watch this one. They're not in the same room. They're not violating any of the 6-foot boundaries. Everybody's in front of a TV screen. What are we doing here? This is, you know what this is? This is the Peloton commercial, which, by the way, is Peloton killing it or is Peloton killing it? Remember the Peloton commercial around the Super Bowl? We're like, man, how could you get a woman a Peloton? What are you saying about her body? What do you mean you're saying? Somebody wants a Peloton so they don't have to get up and go down the street to, you know, a cycle place. Make sure the seat is clean. Then make sure you overpay for a water. You overpay for a class. Sometimes you don't get the chair that you want. You can't get it adjusted just right. Now you can do this anytime you want. You talk to any real life mom and they're like, you got me a Peloton? That was amazing. Thank you so much. Fake outrage mom is like, what are you saying about my weight? What are you saying? What are you saying about me? Is it a body image thing? Like, all right, now all those dudes that got the Peloton, one, they're using it for themselves. Two, they look like geniuses because you can't go anywhere to work out. Shefty being outraged by the NFL is just like those morons who are outraged by the halftime show at the Super Bowl or the Peloton commercial. Give it a rest. The NFL draft is nothing more than a TV show. It's not even really that interesting, a TV show, to be totally honest with you. It's only interesting because it's so well produced. That's really what it is. There's so many good graphics and highlights and breakdowns. Because the truth is, the actual content itself, in terms of who's going where, like you've never seen 95% of these guys, you've never seen play more than 2 snaps. You can't concentrate on the line. What do you know about the line? You don't know anything.
You know, I saw him against Ohio State, and he's pretty good, so I thought, you know, we should take him.
Like, really? Did you go back and research him? Did you watch all of his games this year? All of his games his freshman, sophomore year as well? Did you? Do you know background research? Do you know that stuff? You know, do you know anything about the defensive line he's played against, or his arm length, or, you know, what the analytics say? Of course not. We all pretend to be geniuses, and we hear something on, you know, by McShay or by Daniel Jeremiah, is going to join us later, and we pretend like we know exactly what, oh yeah. He's got long arms, big wingspan, great for blocking. Give it a rest. The NFL draft should and will go on as planned. Just slightly different. No people.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, and he is a pass catcher. We've got a big contract, but his story is an amazing one. He's Blake Jarwin, who's of the Dallas Cowboys, signed a four-year, $22 million extension with the Cowboys as he ran Jason Witten out of town. That's what happened. He ran Jason Witten out of town. Jason Witten is now a Raider after coming out of retirement. And Blake, congratulations. For people who don't know your story, why were you not offered a scholarship at Oklahoma State out of high school?
I grew up in a small town, Oklahoma school. I actually had to play offensive tackle. We didn't have a lot of guys on the team, so I sucked it up and played tackle. And I'm just grateful they gave me the opportunity to walk on. I never forget. I talked to my head coach. I said, "Do you think I have a chance at walking on to a big school?" And so he said, "Yeah." Went home and I emailed University of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma State emailed me back and said, "Hey, we can't give you anything, not even a preferred walk-on, but you can come, do the tryout." So that first week of school, I went up there and did the 40, the vertical, the bench press, all that, and they must have needed an extra guy, and I slipped in. So, but extremely grateful nonetheless.
You're from Tuttle, right?
Yes, sir.
Tuttle High School. So for people who don't know, where is Tuttle?
Tuttle is like southwest of Oklahoma City, small town, 3A, Oklahoma ball. So, it's definitely not up to what Texas football, high school football is about, but we always had good showings back then. But like I said, it's 3A football in Oklahoma. We ran the ball 90% of the time. We had a few guys on the team, but I had to step up and play offensive tackle, and I was about 6 foot, about 200 pounds maybe, so a little bit different, but worked out for me, I'd say.
Now, what I found, having spent time in Oklahoma, is it feels like most of the small towns, not all of them, but most of the small towns that are in the country are more Oklahoma State towns, and whereas the city is a little bit more OU, although football, a lot of people are OU. Was Tuttle, like Kingfisher is an OSU town, Bartlesville seems to be an OSU town. What about Tuttle? Was that mostly everybody loved OU or OSU?
It's pretty split, but I will say that Jason White, OU's Heisman winner, came from my hometown, and he lived about a mile away from my house. So, obviously, I was a big Jason White fan growing up, and grew up an OU fan. And then, but once the OSU emailed me back, that was it. Kind of changed.
I love that they emailed you back. Was that a Hotmail account? You haven't been in the league that long, but that does feel a little like a Hotmail. Okay, so you get to Oklahoma State, you're 200 pounds. Give me the progress that it took you to earn a scholarship.
Yeah. So when I got there, when I tried out, I put on like tight end, defensive end on my list. And they called me and they said, "Hey, you made a team." Well, they never tell me what I made the team to be. So I was like, I guess I'm just going to go offense. So I tried that. Well, we didn't have a tight end. So I got moved over to the receiver room and, just was on a scout team for, months. And then we were playing Kansas State, and it was when Colin Klein was there. We needed a bigger body to get in there and run the ball as a quarterback. And so I raised my hand. I said, I'd love to do something like that. And that was kind of my first opportunity, really, to kind of show what I could do. And, I took full advantage of that. And then
you played, Colin Klein was known as Optimus Klein, by the way. He was like a single wing. So you played Colin Klein on the scout team.
Right, yeah, I played in there, and they, after that, the whole defense used to call me Optimus because I did a pretty good job, I guess, and helped him out, and so that was my job for the next 2 years. I played him, and I played the Belldozer also, ironically enough, now that he's on the Cowboys with us, so excited to meet that guy. But, that was kind of those were my first opportunities and kind of how I got exposure. And about a year later, Coach Gunny came up to me while we were stretching. He's like, "What do you think about moving over to tight end? We want to, we want to create a position, a new position for that." And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." And so I jumped on the opportunity and started on special teams and slowly started getting more playing time. And then the start of my fourth year, my redshirt junior year, they said, hey, we're going to put you on scholarship. So, you know, it was a very happy call to call my parents and tell them that.
Who was freaking out more?
Oh, mom cried instantly. She couldn't talk on the phone. You know, dad, he at least kept his, you know, he had it under control, at least on the phone with me. So, you know, but that does, I love calling my mom to just tell her, you know, when I got my contract, I told her right before it was going to happen. And, you know, she's bawling on the phone and, you know, just everything they've done for me to give me, you know, cause it takes a lot of financial help to go as a walk-on. And they were able to provide that for me. So I'm very thankful for them.
Blake Jarwin joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, so 2017 draft. Did you think you were going to get drafted?
I knew it was going to be a long shot. Kind of even as we created the position at tight end, we really never put our hands down when I was there. And, you know, I was used mostly as kind of a yo back and a slot receiver. Sometimes I'd play outside receiver, but, you know, very rarely I'd put my hand down, you know, consistently. So I knew it was going to be a, you know, most likely late round pick, or I'd go undrafted. So I was prepared for it. My agent did a great job helping me out and giving me opportunities. And it ultimately came down to Philly or Dallas, and I chose Dallas, which I was a big Philadelphia fan growing up, actually. But I chose Dallas. I thought that would be a better spot for me to start my career. And, you know, I'm happy I made that decision.
Why were you a big Philadelphia fan growing up?
No specific reason. My mom was a big Dallas fan. My dad was a 49ers fan. I kind of wanted to do my own thing, I guess. Donovan McNabb, Brian Westbrook, all those guys. My room was green. I had a fat head of LeSean McCoy for a little bit. But, you know, when it came down to the time, I just said, you know what, I want to be a Dallas Cowboy. And, you know, it's the best decision I've made.
Yeah, you would have been a Super Bowl champion, though, right? I mean, you do realize that.
Hey, yeah, I do realize that, but I think it all worked out for the best. I wouldn't.
Yeah, right. You might not have made the team. I mean, they had Ertz. You might not have made the team. That's the other part, is you might not have made a team. What is the feeling like of making the team? Making the, because now you more than made the team. Now you get the second contract, which is the game changer. But when you made the team in 2017, what was that feeling like?
Yeah, it actually it was midseason. I was on practice squad halfway through. And it was actually Philadelphia who had called to try to scout me and go onto their squad. And so I was able to make it work with Dallas. They ended up putting me on the roster, and I think that was like week 8 or 9. And, you know, it was an incredible feeling. I only suited up one time that year, but, you know, just to feel like they wanted to keep me and have me on the team like that and were able to make it work, it was awesome. And then obviously to get where I'm at now, you know, just the opportunities that they provided me, and I've been lucky enough to execute those opportunities. So, you know, excited about the next step. Obviously, kind of got a situation going on right now. We're trying to figure out how we're going to go all about this, and probably be a lot of Zoom conferences coming up. But, you know, trying to stay on top as much as I can.
A couple more things before I want to get to your thoughts on Dak and the contract and Amari's new contract, et cetera. Blake Jarwin, tight end, Dallas Cowboys. I've literally never heard anyone say a bad word about Jason Witten. It's crazy. And as a Cowboy, he's going to be a Ring of Honor guy. He ends up signing with the Raiders because he wants to keep playing. Obviously, he wasn't great last year coming out of the booth. What is it about him? What did he teach you? What is it about him that makes him such a beloved, now former Dallas Cowboy?
Yeah, it was. I think I had a great, you know, amount of time with him. As I came in as a rookie, obviously he was still the every down guy and was playing, and I was just an undrafted guy. So I kind of sat in the back of the room and just watched how he worked on and off the field. And the way he took care of his body, the way he, you know, pushed himself in the classroom and then on the field, being a, at that time, 14-year guy in the league, I mean, it looked like, you know, he never took a playoff. He never took a rep off. No matter what was going on, he was always in tune. And then to have the ability, once he retired, to play and have that game experience, to have him turn around and come back and play, well, then it was a different perspective for the both of us, because I had some type of game experience, and he also, you know, respected me in a sense that I had that experience. So we were able to bounce ideas off each other and, you know, just have that ability to learn from a guy like that who, like you said, is going to be a Ring of Honor for Dallas one day. And, you know, I'm going to join that list of guys. I can't say enough good things about him and how he taught me, even, you know, not having conversations, just watching how he worked every single day. Even when he came back, it was the same routine. He was early. He left late. He was in the classroom. He's really, you know, he was pushing us, and I appreciate that from him. And, you know, it's going to be different to see him over there in Las Vegas, but I'm excited for him, and, you know, it'll be a good opportunity.
Was the hair conversation off limits?
He told me I shouldn't cut my hair. I can't remember when it was, about halfway through the season. I was talking about how I'm done with it. I'm going to cut mine off. He's like, trust me, man. Hold on to it as long as you can. Don't cut it for me. So I never mentioned anything about his hair, though.
Yeah. Okay. I just wondered. Just like, hey, last year you had this. Never mind. Like, I'm just gonna kind of come. So obviously, like, this is an interesting year where Jalen got his contract before last season. Zeke holds out, gets his contract. You and Amari get a contract. In terms of being involved in negotiation, did you sit down with Steven and Jerry, or is it all through your agent and he called you and told you, here's the numbers, do you accept? Like, how did it actually work?
Yeah, my agent, she actually did a really good job for me. I went all through her. She talked through Steven and everybody. It was a pretty smooth timeline. I had an idea of what I wanted to get done, and we were able to get there together, and I think it's friendly for both sides. But I mean, obviously, when you're talking about Dak, this is a next level contract. So, sure. But I can't say enough good things about him either. He's the leader of our offense, leader of our team. You know, when it's the 2-minute drill and you're down by 7 points, he's the guy on the huddle running it. So, you know, hopefully we can get that all figured out here pretty soon and squared away so we can focus on winning a Super Bowl here pretty soon. So,
why do you think you guys struggled against the better teams last year?
You know, a lot of things go into that. I think as players, we got to do a better job of just putting a full game together. We started out strong and not finished the game the way we'd like, or we didn't start out very good, and we were, you know, chasing the whole way through. So, you know, I think it puts the onus on us. We got to do a better job of putting full games together, and I think we're all well aware of that. And we've, you know, put together a really great team through the free agency period so far, and I think we got some true leaders coming in. So it's, I think the culture of the team's going to definitely help us out. We're going to just build on our chemistry that we have and push each other.
Blake Jarwin joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. Have you talked to Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, twice. Just in the hallway passing a little bit. Obviously, he's kind of been all over the place trying to get everything figured out. And then the virus obviously is going to keep us from going in and getting more time together. So, but I'm excited. You know, I've heard only good things about him, the way he goes about his day, the way he coaches, the way, you know, he runs a program. So it's going to be really good for us, a little bit of a change, but that's never bad, I don't think. I think it's going to push us and kind of push the reset button, and it's going to make us work, and I'm excited to get to it.
You know, there is the loophole to get in the building. You know what that loophole is, right?
What's that?
You got to be rehabbing.
That's right.
So remember that injury? Like, I don't have an injury. Remember that injury you had? Like, I don't have any. I'm not hurt. Oh yeah. I got it. Yeah. I've heard. So now, where is your speak? We call them speakeasy workout places, right? Where you knock three times and have to know the code. Do you have a speakeasy workout place?
Not right now. I've been in contact with you know, the workout company Powerlift. I'm trying to get a in-home gym put in right now. We're going to get that squared away tomorrow morning. I got to finalize everything. So right now it's been all, you know, I was talking to somebody and they said, go get a deck of cards, and for every suit, do a different exercise and go through the whole thing and do the number on the card. So that's kind of been my thing right now. And then I'll go outside and run as much as I can. And I got a big field next to my house where I can do some cutting. So obviously we are not really sure of what this timeline is going to look like, but I'm going to make sure that I'm prepared for anything and, you know, anytime. So I think that's all of our jobs right now. It's definitely tricky, but we got to do what we got to do to stay healthy and, you know, prevent injuries when it's time to go.
How do you maintain perspective, Blake? I mean, you're a guy who came small town, Oklahoma, playing offensive line, literal old school walk-on, makes it, then essentially, you know, undrafted. Now you're the starting tight end for the Dallas Cowboys. How do you keep the perspective of where you came from to where you are now?
I think in the back of my head, I always had big goals for myself. You know, I've had a lot of good people help me along the way, but I definitely have a longer list of, you know, bigger goals ahead of me that I want to get to, and I think that kind of keeps me level-headed. I haven't reached a point where I can be content with myself, So, you know, I'm excited about the future. I'm excited about this team. You know, we got a lot of good things ahead of us, and it's guys like that. When you got good guys in the locker room, it makes you want to work harder and be a better football player and a better man. So, you know, it's more than about me. It's about, you know, those guys in the room, my family, and, you know, like I said, I'm excited about the future.
Blake, congratulations on the new contract. Thanks so much for representing our alma mater so well. And
yes,
I look forward to seeing videos of you cutting, like people rolling by your house going, there's Blake Jarwin cutting in a field, working on coming out of his break.
That's right. Yep. I'm sure somebody will catch it eventually.
Thanks, Blake.
I appreciate you, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Daniel Jeremiah joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. Move the Sticks is the podcast. You'll see him on the NFL Network. First thing is, favorite holiday, least favorite holiday, go.
Oh, favorite holiday. Easy. It's Christmas for me. It's favorite holiday, especially as a parent. Least favorite holiday. Least favorite holiday. I don't know. I don't. We've talked about this before, Doug, but I don't drink, so St. Patrick's Day doesn't really have a whole lot of juice for me.
All right. Fair enough. Although I will say, I said this before you joined us. Thanksgiving, Christmas, the great things are you're around family. I'm not sure that'll have the same feeling this year, as we'll spend a lot more time around our family. Like, this is really good where you get a chance to go on walks with your kids and talk and play board games. But those were things that were reserved for holidays, and now they become part of everyday life.
It almost felt, I told the kids the other day, I said, I almost feel like we should put the Christmas tree up put Christmas music on, because it kind of just, that's what it feels like. Everybody's home for Christmas break and putting puzzles together and playing card games and, you know, all that. It's exactly what it feels like.
Card game of choice in your household?
Spades. Yeah, we team up, we go spades.
Ooh, they know how to play spades, huh?
Yeah, they do. So it's usually me and my oldest daughter against two middle kids. That's the big spades matchup.
I like that. I need to teach them how to play spades or hearts or euchre. That's all kind of the same. We play BS and we play a game called Stress, which they like. But spades we can definitely play in the no table talking in spades. No table talking.
No, don't. Hey, do not talk across the table. I've had to get very serious on that rule.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Why is Adam Schefter so bent out of shape about proceeding with the draft? I understand the GMs. It's going to make their job more difficult. There'll probably be some more misses. It's harder to get physicals on guys, individual physicals, whatever. We had the combine. You don't have the pro days. Again, it's more difficult, but, you know, this allows the NFL to become even bigger. It's essentially a TV show anyway. 21st century, if it's done, why the pushback?
Well, I would imagine, and I did not see it. I don't know if Adam went on TV or tweeted or what, so I'm not aware. I'm learning about this for the first time. But I would imagine more than execution would be optics would be the reason why you hear some pushback. I think you can execute. I mean, I've talked to two GMs in the last 24 hours, one who was excited about it going on as scheduled because he felt like they were ready to go and thought it might end up being an advantage for him because they were ready. Another talked to another GM and just said logistically trying to, you know, to map out how they're going to execute trades and different things, you know, that there was some concern there. So, look, we've got some time. It's, 3 weeks here to get ready and figure it all out. But I see both sides of it, Doug. I don't come down on it super hard one way or the other. I thought free agency was an awesome distraction. But you also see the reports about where this thing could be going in 3 weeks, and maybe that's a different deal. So I don't know. I see both sides of it.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Dana Jeremiah is our guest. If you are the Cincinnati Bengals, is there a realistic asking price that the Dolphins could pay to get that first pick?
Two answers. If it's me, no. I'm taking Joe Burrow. I'm not taking picks. I take the quarterback I believe in, and that's a decision that can last you for 15 years. So that's what I would do. Now, the Dolphins have an unbelievable amount of draft capital to try and go up there to do it. I've said if you were okay with making the trade and you're okay with trading off Joe Burrow, if I'm the Cincinnati Bengals, I'm telling them, okay, you have to figure out a way to get to number 3 with Detroit. And then once you have that kind of agreed upon, then see what we can do. And then that would be kind of a two-part trade, and you execute it all at one time. You make the trade up to three, immediately followed by the trade up to one. And that way, if I'm the Cincinnati Bengals, I go to three, I'm either going to get Tua or I'm going to get Chase Young. And that's how I would roll.
I think that's reasonable. Okay, so what is the package? Let's say they give you, do you need, say it's three first-round picks, but you got to spend, two of them in order to get to three. Is that enough? Because that only nets you one first-round pick, right? They have three this year. I think they have two next year. What's the package?
Well, they not only have three this year. When you look at what else that Miami's equipped with in this draft, I mean, it's ridiculous. They have 5, 18, 26. They also have in the second round 39 and 56. Plus, they have two first-round picks next year. So they have all the ammunition they would need. So if you're going to go, I haven't looked at the value chart yet, but I would imagine if you're going to go from 5 to 3, so maybe you have to give up 5, 39, which would be a high second round pick this year, and maybe it's a second round pick next year. I wouldn't give up the first next year, but that's reasonable. You're going from 5 to 3. Detroit's still going to get Jeffrey Okuda, more than likely, who they want. So they go from 5 to 3, still get the player that they want, and they get a second-round pick this year and a second-round pick next year. So then you're left with the ammunition to go up to number one. You part with number three, probably number 18, and then your second-rounder, which would be 56. That would probably, I would guess, get it done. And you also have players. You could try and take some of the picks away and include a Xavier Howard or, a big-time talented player. So there's definitely ways you could map that out where you can make that work just because they have so many picks.
Can they stay in pat at 5 and expect to get Tua?
I think it's 50-50 of whether the Chargers want to go up and get him. I just look at how aggressive the Chargers were with Tom Brady. And that, to me, signified an aggressive off-season approach. We saw him be very active and bringing in some guys. To me, that would point towards the Chargers being motivated to go up and get somebody like Tua. But that's just how I look at it from the outside.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Daniel Jeremiah. You'll see him during the NFL draft. Okay, a couple of little logistics things before we get to some draft stuff. So as of right now, you're going to do it from your house, the draft from your house?
Yeah, nothing's been concrete. I'm quite certain, though, it'll be from my house. So, and what it all looks like or how that all comes together, it's TBD, but I'm fully expecting to be doing it from home.
That's pretty amazing. And then who's going to be your assistant? You have kids that they want, I'm sure they want to be their assistants because they want to get a little TV love.
I was thinking, I could have a 4-person research department just off camera. Yeah, that's a great idea.
I know. Okay, so this draft is loaded. With tackle, with offensive line, and with wide receivers, correct? Is that a clear?
Yep.
And then the weak spot in it would be there's not a lot of tight ends, if any, that'll go in the first round. Running backs are okay. I feel like safeties, linebackers, especially, not a great depth of them early.
See, I thought before the combine, I was kind of with that on linebackers. I was kind of, I don't know about this linebacker class. And then they all were very impressive. So I came out of that thinking, okay, this linebacker group's a little bit better than we think. Safeties is okay. But I would say to me the question mark is really edge rushers. Because after Chase Young, I mean, Chase Young is my number one edge rusher, Doug. He's my number two player overall. My next edge rusher is my 25th player. And Chase on from LSU, and so there's not as much high end edge rush talent in this draft.
The wide receiver that you're in love with?
Whew, there's a bunch of them. I will say, not my highest rated player, but a wide receiver that I'm in love with that I love the way that he plays is Van Jefferson, and I think you're going to probably get him in the third round, maybe even in the fourth round. But his dad's Sean Jefferson, longtime NFL receiver, who's a receiver coach in the NFL. This kid is a professional. Like, just reminds me a lot of Cooper Kupp when he was coming out, and he's somebody you're going to get in that third, fourth round, and he's going to jump right on the field and be ready to roll.
Wide receiver who you'd pass on?
Right now, I would say Jalen Reagor. I like Jalen Reagor, but I think he's got a real good opportunity to go in the first round, and that's too high for me, just with the number of drops that he has, just not real consistent with his hands. So that would be one I'm not quite as high on as maybe the rest of the league.
Okay, the offensive tackle position is interesting. You got Wirfs, who most people has as the top-rated tackle. Mekhi Becton, who's a monster. We had Eric Wood on, and he's known him not only because of the Louisville connection, but even before he played in college, and he swears by him. He got Jedrick Willis as well, who's, by many people's estimation, the third. We had Andrew Thomas on yesterday, four-year starter at Georgia. How big is the spread between Wirfs and, say, a Thomas in terms of the rankings 1-4?
Yeah, for me, I have it. Becton is my top guy because you don't see people like this come around very often. So I have it. To me, it's Becton, then Wills, then Wirfs. And I think those three guys are very close, and I can make an argument for any of them to be the top guy. I think those are all three legit top 10 type players. And then I have a little bit of a drop off. Then I get down to 17 overall for Andrew Thomas from Georgia, who I think so. He's a first round tackle. I don't think he's a top 10 type talent, but he's going to play left tackle and be very functional.
If he was put in a right tackle for Tampa, because that's about where Tampa picks, they need a right tackle. Can he do it?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I actually think he'd probably be better suited over there. He's not the athlete that some of those other guys are that we mentioned there at the top.
What is the defining characteristic that says, hey, this guy's a better left tackle than right tackle or right tackle? What is it?
To me, it's just, are you the quick-footed athlete that can mirror and match up with the elite speed, And when you're the right tackle, most teams are a little bit right-handed as run teams. So, meaning you're going to have a tight end over there with you, and you're going to be more involved in the run game on that side. I mean, in a perfect world, you have two left tackles. One of them just plays on the right side. But that, to me, is kind of the difference. Usually it's just a difference in overall athleticism.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Daniel Jeremiah. You'll see him on the coverage of the NFL Draft. You can download the Move the Sticks podcast, he and Bucky Brooks. All right, let's get to the quarterbacks. Where are you on who the third quarterback on the board should be?
I have it with Herbert. So I have it Burrow, Tua, Herbert. But to me, it's almost like a tier discussion where I think there's the top two guys for me, then there's a significant drop off before you get to the next two, and it's very close between Herbert and Love. And so that just comes down to a flavor thing. Justin Herbert's a little safer, a little more what you're getting. Maybe not as much excitement, not as much wow factor, not as much creativity. Love gives you all that stuff, but there's also some drawbacks there with the decision making. So I went back, Doug. I posted it the other day on Twitter, but I went back to a pamphlet or a handout we were given when I was in Baltimore. This is back in the early 2000s, and it was Bill Belichick's instructions to personnel staff with the Cleveland Browns in 1991.
Yes,
I love that. And it's fascinating, man. And the thing is, what Belichick likes at every position has been the same for 30 years. And at the quarterback position, the one thing that jumps out and what he demands is decision making. So. It's hard to forgive poor decision making at that position.
Yeah, decision making and accuracy, I think, as well. If I read that correctly, like accuracy was right up there, which stands to reason why he isn't into Jameis Winston decision making. Accuracy, Cam Newton, right? What about Stidham? What's your eval of Stidham? A guy who is a very heavily recruited star and went to Baylor, then transferred, very heavily recruited, then started at Auburn for 2 years, but didn't set any kind of new land speed records or whatever. What's your take on Stidham?
I think he's interesting. And I think when you look at where they're picking at 23, I don't think they're going to have an option to upgrade over Jarrett Stidham. Jarrett Stidham's very talented. I played in that goofy offense at Auburn, tough to evaluate. But I've seen the kid throw. I saw him at an Elite 11 event where he was a counselor and was throwing. This dude is very talented. He's a really good athlete. He's a good kid. So I think they've got a lot to work with. I'd be a little bit surprised. I know some people have kind of penciled them in as a quarterback team. I don't think they will. I think they're going to give this kid a chance.
I tend to agree with you. Frank Reich says no arm strength issues with Rivers. He looks exactly the same. You saw every game Rivers has played over the last 3 years. Is there any fade in Rivers?
No, I think the arm strength is still the same. I agree with him on that. I think Phillip gets frustrated. I think that's been the issue, and that's a combination of of guys not necessarily protecting him well or not being in the right spot or drop ball, and then it starts to snowball. So that's the biggest thing, is just being able for him and those around him to kind of get him in a spot where the stakes don't compound, you know, and don't get too frustrated.
Awesome stuff. DJ, get back to playing that spades. We need a nightly kind of tote board as to who's been winning the spades games and how you specifically are doing.
And the good thing is, I don't know that they've caught up with some of the terminology that I use with my playing partner and my daughter, because I will ask her if my finger's bleeding, and she knows what that means, so that's good.
Awesome. Meaning that you have red cards, right?
There you go.
Right?
There you go.
I got it. Your table talk. You just said no table talking, then you gave away the fact that you are, in fact, table talking.
Yeah, but you got to be sly about it. You can't just say, like, hey, play a spade.
How old is she?
She's a senior in high school. She's 18.
And then how old are the other two?
So then we go up against the 16 and 14.
This is like the most they've ever had conversations with you in years, right? It's like, like, hey, dad's kind of fun. I kind of like this guy. Who is this guy? Dad? Oh, hey, yeah, he's the one for the house and the lights. Cool. Hey, thanks, big fella. DJ, great stuff, dude. Thanks for joining us.
See you, buddy. Be safe. See ya.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us from Diego.